to defend themselves. Within seconds, weapons fire streaked in all directions, ricocheting off the bulkheads and equipment. As with most of the combatants they had met thus far, the training of those in engineering was subpar. In seconds, the Gottesjacht had killed nearly everyone, and those who were left were tossing their weapons out into the middle of the compartment, throwing their hands up and begging for their lives. "Please do not kill us!" one of the engineers begged the lieutenant as he came out from his cover, his weapon trained on the man. In seconds, the other five Gottesjacht were on them, dropping them to their knees and searching them for weapons before applying bindings to their hands and feet.
"But you will need us to operate the ship," the engineer reminded them.
Lieutenant Rezik moved to the main engineering control console and began entering commands. "Seeing as how I hold high-level degrees in both physics and engineering, and my men hold degrees in related topics such as power generation, propulsion systems, computer and control systems, and advanced electronics, need for your assistance seems doubtful."
But, these systems are quite complex. They are of the latest technology. You couldn't possibly expect to."
Several indicators on the mess of engineering displays on the wall in front of the lieutenant began to light up, and a low hum began to rise in pitch and intensity as the Tayenta zero-point energy reactor plants began to come online. The engineer watched in disbelief as indicator after indicator came to life. The lieutenant tapped the comms controls on the side of his helmet.
"Alpha Leader, Charlie Leader, reactors are coming online now. We should have maneuvering and main propulsion momentarily and jump capability shortly after."
"Charlie Leader, Alpha Leader, good work, Lieutenant," General Tellus replied.
Lieutenant Rezik turned back to the engineer kneeling before him with his hands on his head.
"You were saying?"
The cargo airlock door opened and the first few hundred Coronari stepped through into the massive forward hangar deck of the Glendannon. Those strong enough helped those who were weakened by starvation and physical abuse while in captivity. Regardless of their haggard condition, they moved quickly and in disciplined fashion, knowing the lives of their fellow Coronari as well as the Gottesjacht that had risked their own lives to rescue them, depended on their rapid debarkation. Volker Gucci checked his flight displays as he rolled his ship back and forth to evade the weapons fire coming from behind him.
"I'll be there in 30 seconds, Vol," Tariq called.
"Take your time," Vol replied confidently
as the truss work of the spaceport superstructures raced past him on all sides.
"This guy's playing right into my hands."
"You want to clue me in?"
his weapons officer asked.
"Just hold on," Vol warned.
He pulled his flight control stick back, causing his ship to rotate around the engine nacelle axis, bringing his nose over to face the Dusan octofighter that was pursuing him. A split second later, he killed his main thrust, flipped his engine nacelles over to face aft as well, and fired the plasma cannons on the front of the nacelles. The red bolts of plasma energy slammed into the octofighter shields, overwhelming them and causing them to collapse. With the enemy shields down, the next round tore into the octofighter's hull, causing it to explode. His ship rocked as defensive fire from the shipyard slammed into his shields, causing them to flash repeatedly. After a quick glance at his flight displays to ensure a clear jump line, he flipped his ship back over to face in his direction of flight and pressed the jump button to escape the bombardment.
"Nice,"
his weapons officer congratulated from the back of the Gunyoki fighter's cockpit.
"If that guy had ever watched a race, that would not have worked that easily," Vol admitted.
"Power, propulsion, and maneuvering are online. We'll be able to jump by the time we clear port,"
Lieutenant Rezik reported over the general's helmet comms.
"Understood," the general replied. "It is time," he told Captain Navarro.
"I'm almost done entering the override codes," Suvan replied.
"It is a complex system of entering algorithms using various parameters and then using the results of those algorithms to generate an override code that the system will accept. If done incorrectly, the entire system will shut down and our mission will be over sooner than expected."
"By all means, Captain, take all the time you need."
An eyebrow went up on Captain Navarro's face.
"Gottesjacht humor," he said as he punched in the final numbers. "I've missed it."
Suvan entered the last few numbers and pressed the send key. After several seconds, the control panel lit up.
"We have control," he announced. "Take us out, gentlemen."
The technicians looked at one another, then back at Captain Navarro.
How?
"What?
We're technicians, not pilots,"
the technician told him.
"None of you know how to operate this ship?"
General Tellus asked them. They all shook their heads. General Tellus moved to the main control station at the center of the bridge.
How hard can it be?
I trust you are familiar with Takar navigation systems, Suvan asked, moving to the helm station next to the general.
I believe I can figure it out quickly enough,
the general assured him, taking a seat in the navigator's chair.
I can pilot it, but I will need your assistance operating the jump drive, Suvan explained.
Vasya, find the weapon station and see what you can do, the general ordered.
Yes, sir,
the corporal replied.
Where's that?
Over there,
one of the technicians said, pointing to the left.
Do you know anything about it?
The corporal asked as he headed over to the weapons station.
Yes,
he replied.
It's my job to test it.
Then get your ass over here, the corporal ordered.
We won't be able to detach and retract all the various boarding ramps, Suvan warned. That is done by the shipyard.
We've got that covered, the general promised, tapping the comms controls on the side of his helmet.
Gunyoki Flight Alpha Leader, we are about to get underway.
Copy that, Alpha Leader,
Vol Kaguchi replied. Give me 30 seconds.
You take the starboard side, I'll take port,
Vol instructed as he steered his Gunyoki fighter into the assembly bay around the Tayenta and maneuvered over to the battleship's port side.
Locking missiles on all gantries and boarding ramps,
Issa announced.
Are you sure about this?
Part of the plan, my friend, Vol assured him. Issa took a deep breath and pressed the firing button. 2 dozen stub missiles leapt from the missile pods on either side of the Raccoon fighter, streaking ahead and slamming into every structure that was connecting the Tayenta to the shipyard surrounding it. Gantries, boarding tunnels, and the like blew apart, sending debris in all directions. A moment later, the massive Takaran battleship, now under the control of Suvan Navarro and the Gata Jacques, fired its docking thrusters and began to move slowly forward.
Dusan battleship is leaving Port Bay 1, Lieutenant Commander Kona reported from the Aurora sensor station.
Steer us into that battleship and prepare to jump us in, Nathan ordered.
We can't stand toe-to-toe with that thing, Jessica warned. It's bigger and better armed than any other battleship we've seen so far.
Turning into target, Lieutenant Denev acknowledged.
We just have to keep it busy and away from the Tayenta until she can get underway, Nathan reminded her.
On intercept course, Lieutenant Denev reported.
Jump us into standard attack range, Nathan ordered.
Jumping,
Mr. Bickle replied. The jump flash washed over the Aurora's bridge, and the main view screen filled with the image of the Dusan's battleship pulling out of the bay at the far end of the orbital shipyard.
Fire all weapons, Nathan ordered.
Firing!
Jump flash,
Lieutenant Commander Kono announced. Another battleship. I believe it's the one from the Darvino system.
Where the hell have they been?
Jessica wondered as she continued to fire plasma torpedoes at the primary target.
Missile launch from the second battleship, the lieutenant commander warned. They're jump missiles.
Escape jump, Nathan ordered.
We're moving, Suvan announced from the Tayenta's helm. How long until the jump drive is ready?
3 minutes minimum, General Tellus replied.
That is the tactical display, right? Corporal Vasya asked the technician.
General, there's a really big battleship pulling out of the number one bay to port. They're going to have a really easy shot at us.
Then perhaps you should figure out how to fire first, Corporal, the general suggested.
Working on it, sir, Corporal Vasya promised.
Everything is automated, the technician assured the corporal. All you have to do is tap the icon you want to attack, and the system will choose the right weapons based on target type, distance, rate of increase or decrease in range, etc.
Excellent, the corporal replied, pressing the icon representing the battleship.
Nothing happened, so he pressed it again.
Nothing's happening.
First you have to arm the tactical grid, then the weapons matrix, then...
The technician pushed the corporal aside.
Let me do it, he insisted, pressing buttons in rapid succession.
Corporal Vasya laughed.
Check this guy out, he said to his comrades.
Show us what you've got, tech boy.
The technician quickly finished, setting up the weapon system for automatic weapons assignments, then began quickly pressing icons on the screen.
The system is functioning, he said as he watched the display. It's selecting multiple weapon systems for multiple targets.
Jesus, it's firing!
Well, that's what it's supposed to do, right?
The corporal said.
It's firing on the battleship,
the technician reported in disbelief.
Oh my god, I think I just killed 2 octo-fighters.
Corporal Vasya laughed, slapping the technician on the back.
Feels good, doesn't it?
Perhaps you two can figure out how to raise our shields when you're done congratulating one another?
Captain Navarro suggested as he steered the ship out of the shipyard.
"My lord, we are taking incoming fire from two warships."
"Two?" Lord Dusan was puzzled. "Which two?"
"The Aurora and the Tayenta,"
the commander replied.
"The Tayenta, how is this?"
His voice trailed off as he examined the tactical plot hanging in the air before him.
"Is her jump drive operational?"
"It is, my lord, but it will be several minutes before it has enough power to jump even a few light days."
"Turn us toward the Tayenta," Lord Dusan ordered. "Block her jump line."
"Her shields are not yet raised," the commander pointed out. "We could easily disable her jump drive and her main propulsion."
"And risk damaging her further? Unacceptable. You must think of the bigger picture, commander."
"Of course, my lord. My apologies."
The commander turned and barked orders at his crew to carry out their leader's instructions, then turned back to Lord Dusan.
"And what of the Aurora?"
"Destroy her," Lord Dusan ordered. "Without mercy."
"Escape jump complete," Mr. Bickle reported.
Nathan glanced at the tactical display as it refreshed, noting that they had jumped only a few kilometers, just enough to escape the incoming jump missiles.
"The Tayenta is moving,"
Lieutenant Commander Kona reported with excitement.
"And she's firing on that battleship."
"Really?" Nathan smiled. "I guess Navarro is back in command." Nathan glanced at the tactical display on the mini-view screen at the center of the helm. His face crinkled and his eyes squinted as he noticed the icon representing the battleship changing course.
"Where's it going?"
"I think he's turning toward the Tayenta, Captain,"
the Lieutenant Commander replied.
"They're going to try and block her jump line,"
Nathan realized, leaning forward in his command chair. "Helm turn to 285 and come 18 degrees up relative. I want us between the Tayenta and that battleship. We have to keep that ship out of their jump line."
285, 18 up relative, aye,"
the lieutenant replied.
"We can't run block for them for long,"
the systems officer warned. "Our shields won't hold." "We'll change the ship's attitude relative to the target, keeping our strongest shields toward them at all times," Nathan explained. "Comms tell the Tayenta what we're up to and tell them to steer away from that battleship and jump as soon as they can. Time is running out."
"Aye, sir."
Nathan rotated his chair around to face Jessica at the tactical station behind him. "I need you to pound that thing with everything we've got. Probe her shields. Find a weak spot. Every shield's got one."
"You got it,"
Jessica replied. All around them, the ground and air battle raged. The shield protecting them flashed constantly and in numerous locations as Dusan ground and air forces attempted to breach the shield with energy weapons, while Alliance Super Eagles and Reapers tried to stop them. Without the shield, they would not have lasted this long.
"Is this the last group?"
Sergeant Eliason inquired at the top of his lungs as the stream of Coronari prisoners from the underground holding facilities to the waiting boxcar continued.
"Yes, sir," Corporal Mitchell replied. "How much time do we have?"
"Don't ask," the sergeant replied.
"Delta Blue Leader, Delta Red Leader, status."
"We're loading the last group now, sir," the sergeant replied.
"Move your ass, sergeant. That battleship will be in firing position in 20 seconds.
"Yes, sir,"
the sergeant replied.
"Fuck,"
he exclaimed in frustration, looking around at the shield perimeter. He turned back toward the stream of men moving toward the waiting boxcar.
"Coronari, double time, move, move, move!"
Suvan Navarro watched the main view screen as he started a slow turn to starboard.
"We're turning," he declared, almost sounding surprised.
"Any progress on those shields, Corporal?"
General Tellis inquired as he attempted to spin up the jump drive.
"We're working on it,"
Corporal Vasi replied, his voice tense.
"Not all of the arrays are operational yet," one of the technicians explained, moving over to help.
"We might be able to reroute some of the matrices in order to generate at least some shielding, but they'll only be half as effective at best."
"Better than nothing, right?"
the corporal insisted.
"Make it happen yesterday, Vasya," the general urged.
"That ship is trying to block us off,"
the technician on the sensor console exclaimed.
"I'm aware of that," Captain Navarro replied as he continued the Tayenta's slow turn to starboard. "This ship is sluggish to turn. I believe her maneuvering system is automatically limited while in close proximity to the shipyards."
"Can we override those limitations?"
the general wondered.
"Probably, but it would take time,"
Suvan replied. "Time that we do not have, I'm afraid."
"Shields are coming up," Corporal Vasi declared triumphantly.
"Not great ones, but they are shields."
"How much coverage?"
Captain Navarro asked.
Port side only, the corporal admitted, and most of the ones around the bow, but only the forward sections are complete. The back half is still full of holes.
Keep working on it, Suvan ordered.
You bet.
That ship is gaining on us, the technician at the sensor station warned. They're going to be in front of us in no time.
The Karazari have managed to evacuate nearly three-quarters of the Koronari prisoners, General Hessen's aide reported. The general studied the tactical maps for both systems, taking special note of the location of their battleship in the Darvino system.
How long until they complete the evacuation?
Xenonor on the ground believe they are loading their last transport now. After that, all that will be left are the Karazari forces that conducted the operation. Perhaps a minute at the most.
Order our battleship to strike the perimeter around the shield, the general instructed. Maximum force.
There will be collateral damage, General,
his aide reminded him.
The site is outside, Aitkena, is it not?
It is, but there are still many residences, businesses, industrial complexes, and even a hospital, all within the blast range of such an attack.
It cannot be helped. If we cannot stop the Karazari from freeing the Koronari, we can at least make the cost a distasteful one.
Tubes coming to bear on target, Lieutenant Denev reported.
Firing all tubes, Jessica announced. Full power triplets.
Don't stop, Nathan reminded her.
Forward cannons are locking on as well,
she added as the bridge lit up with flashes of red-orange light from the departing torpedoes.
Target is holding course, Lieutenant Commander Kona reported. If she doesn't turn, she'll hit us in 90 seconds.
She'll turn, Nathan said, more to himself than to his crew.
Forward cannons are firing.
Target is locking weapons on us, the Lieutenant Commander warned.
They're firing.
A second later, the Aurora rocked again as railgun slugs and plasma bolts lit up their already weakened shields.
Has the Tayenta raised her shields yet? Nathan inquired.
Yes, but not all of them. Some on the port side, mostly forward, but not complete coverage anywhere, the sensor officer reported.
But the battleship hasn't targeted the Tayenta yet.
They will, Nathan said. Helm, maintain position, keep us between the Tayenta and that battleship.
More jump missiles, Lieutenant Commander Kono announced.
Point defenses are on them, Jessica assured her captain.
Six of them, the lieutenant commander added, probably from the second battleship.
Where are they? Jessica wondered as the ship rocked with weapons impacts.
Just maintain position, Nathan insisted.
As the last few hundred Koronari made their way up the massive ramp into the boxcar's cargo pod, the cacophony of the battle around the shield perimeter suddenly ceased.
What the hell?
Corporal Mitchell commented, looking around.
Why'd it stop? He wondered, turning to Sergeant Eliason.
The sergeant looked around as well, equally confused.
Keep them moving, he barked, noticing that the Koronari had slowed their progression, also curious as to the sudden end of the assault against their position.
Delta Red Leader, Reaper 3,
the Reaper pilot called over the General's comms channel.
Dusan forces are falling back and fast.
That can't be good, Mitchell stated.
No, it can't, the sergeant agreed, tapping the comms controls on his helmet.
Delta Red Leader, Delta Blue Leader, suggest we start positioning our forces for a fast bug-out.
Blue-Red, the Master Sergeant responded.
Agreed, Delta Leader to all Gadajak forces. Fall back to evac positions.
The Aurora is not moving, the commander informed Lord Dusan.
How long until her shields are depleted? Lord Dusan asked.
2 minutes maximum, the commander replied, but we will collide with them in half that time.
They will move, Lord Dusan insisted.
And if they do not?
Lord Dusan glared at the commander.
They will move.
Reaper 2, Eagle Leader, are you seeing this?
Eagle Leader 2, yes. They're retreating, all of them.
They're running like scared rabbits,
another pilot laughed.
What is going on?
Josh wondered.
I don't know, but that battleship is now in firing range.
Loki called up the Gadajak comms channel.
Gadajak, Saiki, the battleship has reached firing range.
What the fuck aren't they firing then? Josh wondered. Loki studied the sensor's readings on the Saiki's center console.
I think they're waiting for their forces to get clear.
What are they planning on hitting them with, nukes?
Loki looked at Josh.
Dude, I was kidding. Gadajak, Saiki, recommend immediate evac. Repeat, recommend immediate evacuation of everyone. They're going to hit your position hard.
Captain, Jessica called. I can't defend against two battleships. Sooner or later, they're going to launch everything they've got and overwhelm our defenses.
Not while we're this close to their shipyards, Nathan insisted. They can't risk it.
30 seconds to impact, Lieutenant Commander Kono announced.
Tell them that,
Jessica barked. Hold position, Nathan ordered, determined not to flinch first.
That ship is 6 times our size and 10 times our mass, Jessica warned.
20 seconds.
Nathan felt his anger growing and his frustration rising. They'll plow right through us and barely scuff their paint. Countless scenarios began to run through his mind. Moving, not moving, waiting until a second before impact before jumping, but leaving one of his antimatter cores in the path of the Dusan warship. None of them offered an acceptable result. The Aurora would survive, but the Tayenta would be lost.
15 seconds, Captain,
Lieutenant Commander Kono warned, her tension rising. Then he began thinking about what would happen if the Aurora was lost, or at least severely damaged.
More jump missiles directly astern,
Lieutenant Commander Kono announced.
Captain,
Jessica urged. If the Aurora was destroyed and he and his crew survived, they could still finish up the Tayenta and continue the fight, assuming that the Tayenta survived.
10 seconds.
But if the Aurora was destroyed, he and his crew would also die. Would he become a martyr that would inspire others, or would the loss of Natan cause a loss of hope?
Nathan!
Jessica yelled. Those who fight and run away. There was an odd yellow flash on the left side of the main view screen.
Shield impact!
The lieutenant commander reported.
Hull impact in 5 seconds!
Live to fight another day. Missiles point blank, no jump, Nathan ordered quickly and calmly.
4.
Escape jump, my mark.
3. Launching missiles, point blank, no jump,
Jessica replied.
2.
Nathan couldn't remember where he had heard that phrase before, but it rang true.
Missiles away. 1.
Jump. Multiple explosions to port bathed the semi-spherical main view screen that wrapped around the front half of the Aurora's bridge in hues of red and orange. A split second later, those colors were overwhelmed by a blue-white flash as the ship jumped to safety.
Distance from target? Nathan asked.
10 light minutes,
Mr. Bickle replied, embarrassed that he had jumped so far out to escape.
Dispatch a recon drone for target damage assessment, Nathan ordered.
Aye, sir,
Lieutenant Commander Kono replied.
Sorry, Captain,
Jessica said, feeling guilty for doubting her friend.
No need, Nathan replied. Another spread of missiles, Jess. Hit them before they have a chance to recover and get their shielded side toward us.
Yes, sir.
Helm, come about and prepare for another attack run, Nathan instructed. The more they have to worry about us, the less attention they will have for the Tayenta.
Coming about, aye,
the lieutenant replied.
Logic dictates that they ignore us and try to take out the Tayenta,
Jessica said, offering her opinion. I'm betting they still think they can keep the Tayenta and take us down, Nathan replied as he rotated around to look at Jessica. But I am willing to change my mind if evidence warrants, he added with a wry smile.
Yes, sir.
Lord Dusan leaned on one elbow, his hand supporting his chin, as he listened to the damage reports coming in.
Multiple hull breaches on our starboard side, detonations in our starboard number 3 and 4 propellant tanks, hangar bays and fighter launch tubes on the starboard side are out of commission.
The Tayenta's headed for open space, my lord,
the commander warned. She will have jump capability any moment.
All targeting systems, point defenses, and gun emplacements on our starboard forward quarter are down, along with all shields on our starboard side, from our bow to section 114 just aft of midship.
We must target the Tayenta,
the commander begged. At least take out her jump drive or main power, anything to keep her from jumping away.
87 dead, 120 injured, and 59 missing. 2 reactors are offline and power is at 30% of capacity.
We shall attack, Lord Dusan decided. Target the Tayenta, but only to rob her of her ability to jump.
My lord, our shields are down. Our main power is at minimum operable levels, and a third of our crew is inoperable. Furthermore, our targeting systems are damaged and their accuracy cannot be guaranteed. I recommend we use our still-functional port launch tubes to dispatch our fighters to disable the Tayenta.
And rob us of our glory? Lord Dusan questioned, finding the idea unfathomable.
My lord, in our current state, we can barely defend ourselves. If the Aurora manages to strike our starboard side again...
I think you underestimate this ship's abilities, Commander, as well as the significance her victory this day might hold.
I cannot see matters of the Empire as you can, my lord, the commander stated apologetically.
I can only offer my expertise in regards to this vessel. I willingly leave the future of our empire to you.
As you should,
Lord Dusan agreed, shifting in his command chair. After a moment's thought, he sighed.
"Very well, Commander. You may send our fighters after the Tayenta, but make quite certain they understand their mission."
"Of course, my lord,"
the commander agreed, bowing respectfully.
"And what are your orders for this vessel?"
"Maintain a pursuit course," Lord Dusan ordered. "Stay behind the Tayenta and to her starboard side. That will keep our shielded side toward them. The Empire will not see their flagship retreating."
Six Dusan Octo fighters jumped in less than a kilometer from the Glendannon, immediately launching a barrage of missiles. The massive cargo vessel, its shields already active, absorbed the energy of the missile detonations, but before she could retaliate, the enemy fighters disappeared behind sudden blue-white flashes of light.
"What was that?"
Cameron wondered as the command center deep inside the Glendannon gently shook.
"Dusan Octo fighters," the comms officer reported. "Bridge reports six of them just jumped in, launched missiles, and jumped out. Captain Gullen is jumping the ship to a new position."
"Make sure he tells that last boxcar where to find us,"
Cameron told the comms officer. "There's no way that many people can survive in that thing all the way back to the rally point."
"Yes, sir."
"And tell Captain Gullen he needs to be quicker on the jump next time," she added. "The shields on this ship aren't meant to withstand direct attack, just small rocks and dust."
"That's it," Corporal Mitchell declared. "That's the last of them. Close it up."
The massive cargo ramp on the boxcar's underhung cargo pod began to rise in preparation for liftoff.
"Delta leader to all Gata Jacques,"
Master Sergeant Anwar called over comms. "Fall back to the evac point."
"You heard him, boys," Sergeant Elias yelled. "Let's move."
The sergeant and his men moved quickly away from the boxcar as its door finished closing and its engines began spinning up for liftoff.
"Gata Jacques, Saiki, the battleship is launching weapons."
"Gata Jacques, double time,"
the sergeant barked, breaking into a dead run toward the cargo pod at the center of the protected area where the shield generator was housed.
"Reapers are inbound for evac,"
one of the Reaper pilots reported.
"Buster is inbound for evac,"
the pilot of the cargo shuttle also announced.
"Boxcar 4 is inbound. Get as many people as you can into the shield pod. I can have you off the ground in less than a minute after shield shutdown."
Four large missiles streaked toward the planet on fiery trails, closing the distance from orbit to the surface in less than a minute. As they approached the surface, they split apart into six projectiles each, every one of them with their own deadly warheads. Blinding flashes of light filled the sky, nearly overpowering the filters in the Gata Jacques' combat visors. A second later, a thunderous roar filled the air, and the ground began to shake. The shield protecting them collapsed, and then the ground they ran across suddenly shot upward, sending more than 100 Gata Jacques flying. Seconds later, before they could fall back to the surface, they were incinerated by the blast.
"Oh my God!"
Loki exclaimed. Josh looked at the sensor display on the center console.
"Oh, fuck!"
he gasped. He leaned forward, looking out his window at the planet below, his eyes widening in shock and horror at the glowing mushroom cloud that was rising from the surface.
"Please tell me that wasn't the evac site,"
Marcus begged over comms.
"It was, Pops,"
Josh replied solemnly. The sensors beeped in warning, causing Loki to look again.
"Multiple Octos inbound,"
he said. He looked at Josh, who was still staring out the window at the horror below.
"Josh, we've got to get out of here."
"Yeah, right,"
Josh replied, settling back into his chair.
"I'll jump us to the Glendannon's last position."
"Good idea," Loki agreed. "They need to know."
"Jump drive is coming online," General Tellus reported.
"Eight Octo fighters just jumped in close on our starboard side,"
the technician manning the sensors reported.
"Punching them in now," Corporal Vasya announced.
"Automated defenses are tracking, anti-fighter turrets are firing."
"Get us out of here, General,"
Su Van urged.
"Activating emergency escape jump," the General announced. "Jumping in three."
"Fighters are launching missiles," Corporal Vasya reported.
"Two."
"Point defenses are firing."
"One."
The ship rocked as the missiles struck the Tayenta's starboard side, nearly knocking General Tellus and Captain Navarro out of their seats. Corporal Vasya held on to his console tightly, bracing himself to avoid falling as the ship rocked yet again.
"Multiple hits," he barked. "At least six of them."
"Did we jump?"
Su Van wondered.
"Negative,"
the general replied, scanning his console.
"The jump drive is offline."
The lights went out, and the emergency lighting immediately kicked in.
"Main power is offline,"
another technician shouted.
"What about the zero-point reactors?"
Zuvan demanded.
"I have no idea,"
the technician admitted.
"My console is completely dead."
"So is mine," Corporal Vasya reported. Zuvan glanced at his and the general's console.
"Helm and navigation are both functioning,"
he announced. "I still have maneuvering, but main propulsion is not responding. Whatever speed we've got is all we're going to get for a while. What about your jump drive?"
"I'm showing damage to multiple emitter arrays,"
the general replied. He looked at Zuvan.
"I believe it's time to cut our losses, Captain."
"They took 7 missiles in the starboard side," Lieutenant Commander Kona reported. "Their unshielded side..."
"Are they still under attack?" Nathan asked.
"No, sir, not yet anyway."
"They want that ship intact," Nathan surmised. "What about her jump drive? Can they get it working?"
"Not any time soon," the lieutenant commander replied. "Their field generators are fine, but at least a third of their emitters are damaged. If they try to jump now, they'd probably leave half the ship behind."
"What's that battleship doing?"
"The big one is still shadowing the Tienta, keeping their good shields toward them," the lieutenant commander replied.
"And the other one?"
"They're jumping all over the place, Captain, never in any one spot for more than 30 seconds.
"They're jumping around to launch missiles at us from all directions," Jessica surmised.
"I'm surprised they haven't launched a full-blown time-on-target attack on us yet."
"They will," Nathan said. "They will."
Zuvan Navarro studied his console and then looked at the main view screen. Before them was outer space. Escape. But as far as he had come, those stars were still beyond reach. He realized now they always would be. He thought about his wife, hiding out on a resort world that to date was still outside the Dusan Empire. He wondered how long it would remain so and what might happen if her true identity was ever discovered. He thought about his children, still stuck on Coronair, living under assumed identities, worrying that any moment they too would be discovered. It pained him greatly that he would likely never see any of them again. It pained him even more that he could do nothing more to ensure their safety. Except for one thing. Zuvan breathed in deeply, summoning all his courage.
"General Talus," he began, "please get everyone to your ships."
"Our ships are not usable," the general told him. "This was a one-way trip." Zuvan looked at the general, surprised.
"The escape pods, then?"
"Captain, what are you planning?"
"I will turn the ship around and ram the orbital shipyard."
"A bold idea, to be sure, but if you miss the core, you will not destroy it. Not completely. If the zero-point reactors are still online, it will all be destroyed. The shipyard and any ship within 20 kilometers, I expect."
General Talus also took a deep breath, examining the older captain.
"And I cannot convince you to come with us, I suppose."
"Someone must remain to ensure impact,"
Zuvan said, stating the obvious. General Talus nodded, knowing the brave captain was correct. Zuvan looked at the general.
"Find them. Tell them. Tell them that I died to protect them, and promise me that you will protect them."
"I will protect them by protecting all of us. Takara, Coronair, the entire cluster," General Talus promised. "I will protect them by preventing the spread of those who would inflict their will on others by use of force. On this you have my word, Captain."
"Thank you."
Captain Navarro took another breath, sighing. "I really thought we could do this."
"A victory that comes in an unexpected form is still a victory," the general told him.
Zuvan nodded in begrudging agreement. After a moment, he looked back at the general.
"What are you waiting for, General?"
"I am waiting for my commanding officer to give the order." Zuvan smiled, then pressed a button on the intercom control on his console.
"This is Captain Zuvan Navarro, commander of the Tayenta. Abandon ship. All hands report to the nearest escape pods and abandon ship."
General Talus rose, placing his hand on Suvan's shoulder.
"Good luck, my friend."
"Continue the fight, General," Zuvan replied.
"I am Gata Jacques," the general replied. "I know no other way."
Zuvan Navarro nodded one last time at the general, who then led the others to the exit, leaving the captain to complete his mission alone.
"Message from Command and Control," the Aurora's communications officer announced. "The Coronari evacuation is complete. All forces have left the Darvino system."
The ensign's voice suddenly became somber.
"But there were heavy casualties, sir."
Nathan sighed. He would have to worry about the casualties later.
The Tienta is turning, Lieutenant Commander Kono reported, surprised.
She still has maneuvering? Nathan asked.
Yes, sir, it's a slow turn, but she is turning.
Turning to where? Jessica wondered from behind the tactical console. Nathan again ran multiple scenarios and outcomes in his head, and in a split second came to the only logical conclusion. He's turning around.
The Tienta is coming about, the sensor officer reported. She is turning back toward the shipyard.
I thought she had no propulsion,
Lord Dusan said, casting a cross eye at the commander.
How is it she is coming about?
They are burning their maneuvering thrusters at maximum,
the sensor officer reported, overhearing his leader's question.
An inefficient method, but effective nonetheless,
Lord Dusan commented. He sighed, surrendering to the inevitable.
All ships are to target the Tienta and destroy her.
As you command, my lord,
the commander replied.
And add whatever functioning weapons we still have to the mix, commander, so this ship doesn't appear completely ineffective.
Yes, my lord.
General Tellus and his team quickly found the nearest escape pods, four of which were located at the back of the command deck on the starboard side, not far from the bridge. He pressed the key on the control panel on the bulkhead, and the inner door opened, followed by the pod door itself. He peeked inside, noting that it was designed to accommodate 8 people.
Willem, Tellus, have you located an escape pod?
Are you kidding?
The Master Sergeant replied. The ship is loaded with them.
Good. Get in and wait for Captain Navarro to launch them,
the general instructed.
If something goes wrong and you feel you cannot wait, go manual and launch the pod yourself, but only if you have no choice.
Understood.
Once clear, jump to Rally Point Echo, find a place to hide, and await rescue.
No problem. Good luck, General.
To you as well, the general replied. Rezik, tell us, did you copy?
Affirmative,
Lieutenant Rezik replied. Request permission to delay abandoning my post for a few minutes.
Reason?
I believe I can bypass the safeties that prevent the jump field generators from working when too many emitter arrays are damaged. It may provide Captain Navarro with a tactical advantage.
Make it quick,
the general ordered before he followed his men into their escape pod.
Micro jump, 2 clicks, execute,
Nathan ordered as the Aurora rocked with the missile impacts against their weakening shields.
2 clicks, jumping,
Mr. Bickle replied as the jump flash filled the bridge.
Reacquiring primary target,
Jessica announced.
Starboard shields are down to 30%,
the systems officer warned. Roll us over and show them our port side for a while, Nathan ordered.
Adjust your gun selections as we roll, Jess.
Rolling to port.
I'm with you,
Jessica assured him.
Tienta's finishing her turn,
Lieutenant Commander Kono reported.
You're right, sir. She's burning everything she's got and making a run for the shipyard.
Comms raise the Tienta, Nathan ordered. I want to speak to Navarro.
4 explosions suddenly rocked the Aurora, nearly knocking Jessica off her feet.
Damn it,
she cursed, hanging on.
We just took 4 jump missiles in our number 4 shield.
What happened to our point defenses?
Nathan asked.
They jumped in less than 50 meters away,
she replied.
No time to lock on and fire. Number 4 shield is down to 10%,
the systems officer warned.
One more hit and it's gone.
Lay down a defensive fire field in front of the number 4 shield, Nathan ordered. Chang, Captain, can you channel extra power into the number 4 shield?
Only if I draw it from our jump reserve,
Vladimir replied.
How much jump juice do we have left?
Nathan asked his navigator.
5.2 light years in drive 1, 8.7 in drive 2, Mr. Bickle replied.
Nathan did the math in his head. If they kept their battle jump short and the Dusan didn't pursue them after the battle, it would be enough. It would have to be.
Chang, Captain, do it.
Yes, sir,
Vladimir replied. The ship rocked more violently than before, catching Nathan off guard and nearly knocking him out of his command chair.
Damn it, Jess! Nothing I can do, Captain,
Jessica defended.
Those ones jumped in at 35 meters. Their range and targeting systems must be damned good.
Second battleship just jumped in behind us.
Jesus,
Nathan exclaimed. Well, at least they won't be firing any jump missiles at us.
Incoming railgun fire from the second battleship,
Lieutenant Commander Kono warned. Big ones.
Are you coming with a call to Banco?
Nathan asked.
I'm trying, Captain,
the comms officer replied.
But their comm array is offline. If we can get closer, I can probably get them on a comm set channel.
Helm, slide us in closer to the Tienta,
Nathan ordered as his ship shook with the impact of the incoming railgun rounds.
Suvan Navarro struggled to maintain control of his battered vessel. His automated weapon systems traded energy weapons fire with the Dusan super battleship that was shadowing him just beyond the Aurora, as well as numerous octo-fighters that slipped past the Aurora's defensive efforts on his behalf. Had the Aurora not been running a blockade between him and that ship, he would have been destroyed several minutes ago.
"Captain, tell us," the general called over Suvan's comm set. "We are in the escape pods. I recommend that you jettison all escape pods at once, including the unoccupied ones, so the Dusan will have a more difficult time shooting us down before we are able to jump away."
"An excellent idea, General," Suvan admitted. "I am embarrassed I did not think of it myself."
"I suspect your hands are full at the moment," the General said. "Thank you again, General." "It has been an honor, Captain. Tell us out."
The ship rocked as missiles launched by the super battleship found their way around the Aurora's defenses and found the Tayenta's failing shields. Alarms went off on his panel as several more shield sections collapsed, leaving his ship even more vulnerable than before. He checked his range to the shipyard. At his current speed, it would take him 4 minutes to reach the station. Unfortunately, he doubted his ship would hold together that long.
"Captain Navarro, Lieutenant Rezik," the call came over Suvan's comm set. "Go ahead, Lieutenant."
"Sir, I've managed to bypass the safety protocols that prevent the jump drive field generators from operating when the emitter field is too badly damaged."
"Are you telling me I can jump the ship?"
Suvan asked as he struggled to stay on course.
"Yes, sir. However, I cannot guarantee the distance accuracy of any jump, nor can I promise the entire ship will jump."
"I suppose I'll have to take my chances, Lieutenant. Thank you."
"You're most welcome, Captain," the lieutenant replied. "There's one more thing. I also had my men sabotage one of the zero-point reactors, so the failsafe will not kick in. As you know, if the containment fields fail, the result is a micro-singularity that will consume everything within a few kilometers before the singularity collapses. That type of spatial disturbance should be sufficient to destroy the shipyard and anything nearby."
"Impressive, Lieutenant."
"Thank you, sir, but again, I cannot guarantee an event. Only that if the reactor is seriously damaged or the containment fields are disturbed, the fail-safes that prevent such an event will not operate as designed. It was the best I could do on short notice."
"It was a valiant effort nonetheless, Lieutenant. Now I suggest you and your men get to the escape pods while you still can."
"Captain?"
"Yes, Lieutenant,"
Suvan replied as he checked his range to the shipyard.
"I understand you are a sailor?"
"It's been a few years, but yes."
"Then I wish you fair winds and following seas, Captain."
"To you as well, Lieutenant."
"Rezik out."
Suvan let out a sigh of relief. If he had to die, at least he would strike a serious blow to the Dusan Empire in the process.
Aurora, do you be?
Suvan tapped his comm set, trying to clear up the transmission.
Aurora, you copy?
"Aurora, this is the Tayenta. I copy you."
"Captain Navarro?"
"Yes, this is Navarro,"
Suvan replied as another missile impact rocked his ship, setting off more system failure alerts. There was a pause, and then a voice he never thought he would hear again came through his comm set.
"Captain Navarro, this is Captain Scott."
Suvan smiled broadly, shaking his head in disbelief.
"It is good to hear your voice, Captain."
"Yours as well, my friend.
To be honest, I wasn't sure I believed the messages were actually from you."
"Yours as well, my friend," Nathan repeated with a chuckle. "Perhaps you can share your plans with me?"
"Simple enough," Suvan replied. "I intend to use this ship to destroy the Dusan shipyard and, hopefully, a few Dusan ships along with it."
"I'm assuming you're planning on getting to an escape pod before that happens." Suvan called up the status screen for the escape pods, noting that the one closest to the lieutenant's post in engineering now showed it was closed and ready to launch with 6 persons aboard. Without thinking twice, he activated the auto-launch sequence for all the pods.
"I'd considered that option, believe me. Unfortunately, the ship is too badly damaged. Someone must remain on board to pilot the ship and ensure a successful impact."
"Suvan," Nathan said, trying to make a more personal connection.
"You don't have to do this. Your ship is already on course. Just shut everything down and let your ship's momentum do the job for you."
"I'm still 3 minutes out," Suvan told him as the ship rocked from several missile impacts. More alerts sounded, causing him to call up the damage report screen.
"I've lost 70% of my shields. The ship will not last that long. They'll blow it apart and nothing large enough to do any appreciable damage will reach the target."
"All the more reason for you to..."
Captain, Lieutenant Commander Kono called out. The Tienta just jettisoned her escape pods.
All of them?
Nathan asked in disbelief.
I'm not sure,
the Lieutenant Commander admitted, but it looks like it. Suvan, did you just jettison all of your escape pods? Nathan asked over comms.
It was necessary to maximize my crew's chances of escape.
I don't understand, Nathan said. They'll blow your ship to pieces long before you reach the shipyard, whether you're piloting her or not.
I failed to go down with my ship once, Nathan. I shall not fail a second time.
But you could do so much more to help defeat the Dusan by surviving, Nathan insisted.
Listen, Nathan, I have no death wish. I am just being practical. One of your Gatajak managed to turn this ship into a giant jump missile armed with a micro-singularity warhead.
A what? That had to be Rezik, Jessica muttered.
It is the only way, Nathan. If that shipyard is allowed to continue operating, your chances of defeating the Dusan and freeing my family, my people, all our people.
There was a long pause.
Suvan, Nathan finally called. It is the only way. You know this.
Nathan hung his head down.
I know.
Captain, a third battleship just jumped in on the other side of the Tayenta, Lieutenant Commander Kono announced. They're locking all weapons on her. Nathan steadied his emotions. You're being targeted by a third battleship, Captain. You must jump now.
Understood,
Suvan replied. He's spinning up his jump drive, the Lieutenant Commander reported.
Good luck to you all, Suvan wished them.
The battleship is firing.
Godspeed, Captain,
Nathan replied, standing. He watched his main view screen as his ship continued to be pounded by enemy fire. The pale blue light spilled out across the Tayenta's hull, albeit unevenly. A second later, the portions that were covered flashed, transporting those portions of the battered warship into the shipyard several kilometers ahead, while leaving nearly a third of her behind. As the portion of the Tayenta that was left behind broke apart and exploded, there was a flash of light in the distance.
Max magnification, Nathan ordered, still standing and staring at the screen.
When the view screen refocused, they could see the Takaran shipyard collapsing in on itself as the micro-singularity grew, pulling everything around it across the event horizon. Explosions went off as the shipyard collapsed into the singularity, breaking the station up as it imploded. The singularity grew in size as it consumed the station, but when there was nothing left nearby to feed on, its gravity became insufficient, and it collapsed onto itself, ending in another brilliant flash of light. In less than 10 seconds, what had taken the Takarans decades to build and the Dusan minutes to capture had been completely erased from existence.
If only it had taken those battleships with it, Nathan thought.
Lieutenant Denev? Nathan asked. The lieutenant gazed up at her captain, noticing a tear running down his cheek.
Yes, Captain?
Get us out of here, Nathan said softly. This battle is won. Chapter 11 Nathan sat in his ready room, studying the combat data logs from the battle.
Hey,
Cameron called from the hatch. Nathan looked up.
How's it going?
Cameron entered the room, closing the hatch behind her.
I was going to ask you the same thing.
She pointed at the data pad.
What are you reading?
Just studying the combat logs, Nathan admitted.
You've been studying those for 3 days now, Nathan. Maybe you should give it a rest.
Nathan sighed. I can't help thinking that my new superbrain missed something, that I let my new confidence get the best of me.
It's possible, I'm not going to lie, Cameron said.
But we all miss something, even those of us with superbrains. Hell, even Tellus misses something once in a while. Nathan's eyebrow went up.
Name one, he challenged.
Cameron thought for a moment, realizing she might have misspoken.
Oh, she suddenly exclaimed. I've got one. He recruited Jessica into the Gatajak.
Nathan chuckled. Okay, I'll give you that one.
You know, if you just put that away for a few days and come back to it later with fresh eyes, you just might find what you're looking for.
Funny, Tellus said the same thing an hour ago.
Yeah, I talked to him in the officer's mess, she admitted.
He said he was worried about you.
I'll be all right, Nathan assured her. I just hate losing people, you know?
I know. I mean, 100 Gatajak, and in the blink of an eye, that's nearly half of their numbers.
Don't forget about the thousands of Coronarans that died in that blast,
Gavner reminded him, and the tens of thousands that will likely suffer due to the radiation. It will take the Dusan months to clean that up. Nathan sighed, turning off his data pad. Any comm traffic from Earth? He asked, changing the subject. I'm afraid not, Cameron replied. Not for more than a week. Is it possible that your sister went dark for some reason? I suppose so, Nathan admitted. The intercom beeped. Captain Tactical, Jessica called. Two contacts just jumped in, a Takaran medium cargo ship and a Sol Alliance cargo vessel. On my way, Nathan replied, rising from his seat and following Cameron out.
Captain on the bridge, the guard announced.
Nathan eyed the guard as he passed, annoyed by his constant declarations of Nathan's comings and goings. The Takaran cargo ship is one of ours, Lieutenant Commander Kona reported from the sensor station. The Mata Falls.
What about the Alliance cargo ship? Nathan asked. It has to be Hunt's ship, right?
It is, sir, the comms officer reported. Message from Captain Hunt. He is requesting our presence aboard his ship. He says it is urgent. He is requesting a doctor and a medical team as well.
That can't be good, Nathan surmised. Jess, want to play bodyguard?
Why not?
Jessica agreed. You have the con, he told Cameron.
Yes, sir.
Alert medical, Nathan instructed the comms officer as he and Jessica headed for the exit. Tell them to meet us in the main hangar bay.
Aye, sir.
Nathan and Jessica followed Dr. Chan and her medical team through the tight confines of the cargo ship, winding their way to its modest sick bay. As they approached, Captain Hunt came down the forward ladder, his eyes widening when he spotted Nathan.
Captain Scott,
Captain Hunt greeted.
It's good to see you, Chris,
Nathan said, shaking the captain's hand.
Go ahead,
Nathan instructed Dr. Chen and Jessica. I'll meet you inside.
Jesus, you haven't aged a day, Chris laughed.
Actually, I think I'm a couple years younger. I haven't really done the math yet. When he noticed the confused look on Captain Hunt's face, he added,
It's a long story. Why am I here?
Captain Hunt looked down as he scratched his head, obviously troubled by what he was about to tell the man he had long thought dead.
Maybe we should speak in private, Nathan.
Nathan entered the cargo ship's sick bay. His movements were slow, his expression crestfallen, and his eyes red. He appeared a man broken, a man that had just had his heart ripped from his chest, his being devoid of all hope. Jessica could barely stand to see him suffering so much pain. She took his hand as he neared her, squeezing it lovingly as she gazed into his eyes, her face full of sympathy and compassion.
I'm so sorry, Nathan,
she whispered, almost crying. Nathan looked at her, barely able to control himself. He tried to smile at her, but could not. In fact, at that moment he wondered if he would ever smile again. He had never known such pain and anguish. He had never even imagined it. First his mother, then his brother, and now everyone. Everyone except... Nathan stepped into the quarantine compartment. Inside, Dr. Chan was inspecting three stasis tubes.
How are they? He asked in a whisper.
Dr. Chen looked at him with the same sympathetic expression as Jessica.
The children are not injured. They were put into stasis by your sister's security team. Considering the voyage they were about to take, it was probably for the best. They can be awakened at any time.
Nathan looked at the doctor.
What about?
He couldn't finish his sentence. She is alive, but she is badly injured.
Can you save her?
He was barely able to ask.
I will do everything that I can, Nathan. I promise.
Nathan nodded as if to tell her that he believed she would do her best. The doctor stepped aside, and Nathan moved closer to the three stasis pods. The first two pods contained his niece and nephew, neither of whom he had seen in more than 7 years. They had grown so much he hardly recognized them. They looked so peaceful. He wondered how he would ever tell them what had happened. They, too, had lost so much. Nathan moved to the third pod. It took all his strength and courage to look inside. When he finally did so, he nearly fell apart. His sister, Miri, his closest friend and confidant growing up, lay there motionless. Her face was bruised and swollen, and her head had been shaved. She had a surgical scar on the side of her head and across the top. She had tubes and wires attached everywhere, and she looked like a lifeless corpse, being kept alive by a multitude of technology.
Oh, Miri, he cried.
This concludes Who Takes No Risk by Rick Brown, narrated by Jeffrey Kafer. Copyright 2017 by Rick Brown. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Rick Brown, care of Trident Media, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.